Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today is Friday, May 8th, 2015. My name is Angela Walton-Raji, and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, everyone, how are you today? I hope you have had a good week. We have been really having some lovely spring weather here on the Mid-Atlantic coast, beautiful weather in the 70s and 80s. You know, I am pleased. However, I do want to certainly pause and say, hey, let's all of us say some prayers for the folks out in the middle of the country, friends and loved ones in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas. You've really had a hard time this past week. Very, very severe weather. I encourage you all to certainly check up on friends out there. It's a pretty treacherous weather pattern that's emerging right now. Some very serious thunderstorms, tornadoes, all kinds of things are going on. So even though it may be pleasant where you are, it's a little bit treacherous right now for people. This is the tornado season, of course, and we certainly want to hope that everyone is certainly taking care and being safe, because it's a really, really, really bad situation there. You know, I grew up in that part of the country, and living in the tornado belt certainly has a lot of disadvantages. Beautiful springs, hot summers, but also some very turbulent weather this time of the year. So certainly let's say our prayers for them. I do hope everyone who lives in that part of the country is certainly taking care if there are any weather warnings going on. And of course, over the years, we've, you know, been aware of a number of pretty serious storms that have hit. Friends in Oklahoma City, I know, have had a lot. What was it, just 2 or 3 years ago, there was a very bad storm just outside of Oklahoma City. And just take care, be cautious, watch the skies, because certainly we want you well and safe. Anyway, things are going on in the genealogy community as well, and this is May. Wow, next weekend is the weekend to be in the Washington, D.C. area. I certainly hope that many of you will try to attend the Grand Review Victory Parade that's taking place. Actually, I'm saying next week. It's really going to be on the 17th, so I guess it's a week and a couple of days. This is an amazing event. It's going to be pretty spectacular, and I hope that many of you will consider, if you are in the Washington, D.C. area and want to participate, if you have ancestors who served in the Civil War, participate in the Grand Review Parade. It's going to be just a very, very, I guess, more than just impressive event. It's a day to be there. This is something which is really going to honor the history of the end of the Civil War, the victory, certainly, in which the United States colored troops participated as freedom fighters, as those who were fighting for a slightly different cause, because certainly they were not going to go back to a stage of enslavement from that point on. And I really hope that many of you really will have an opportunity to participate in those events. It's going to go between 12 and 4 p.m., anywhere from 6 to 10,000 marchers and spectators are going to be able to see the Grand Review of the Armies. Yes, this really does, I think, have a potential of being just a tremendous event. I hope to be somewhere along the parade route with my cameras in tow, and will be able to just, wow, give some honor to my ancestors who were United States colored troops. And it's just something that I think it's going to be very, very impressive. And of course, we know that many men after the Civil War, they also joined the Grand Army of the Republic. And there's a lot to talk about, but particularly what it's about is, for many of us, a celebration of freedom. This is more than just more than just celebrating the end of a war. It was the beginning of a new life experience. People's life path had been altered forever. Of course, there was going to still be a lot of bloodshed over the years, over the decades, and as we know, over the century and the next century and a half, bringing us to where we are now. However, this is a wonderful opportunity to pause and say, hey, let's honor our ancestors and let's take a pause and celebrate what they did and appreciate where we are today. Now, this event is being hosted by the District of Columbia Sesquicentennial Commission. And I certainly hope that if you're not participating, that you'll certainly be there as a spectator. I am excited. I certainly intend to be there. I'm looking forward to taking a look to see what the Grand Review Victory March is really going to consist of, what's really going to happen with the parade. And, wow, I think that we should all be appreciative of this event. 2 weeks ago, I was so excited to be in Arkansas to celebrate freedom, to celebrate the time when our own ancestors in my home state found freedom and found their own stories and found themselves facing a new future. Well, this is the time to take time to pause and to say, you know what, yes, that is on this part of our past. We've never talked about it much, primarily perhaps because many of us don't know this part in our history. Many of us don't know still about the story of the United States colored troops and who they were and whether they came from the states where our ancestors lived. Many people don't know in their own hometown there were regiments that were organized right there. So I hope that you will join many of us. If you can't be there in person, then I certainly hope that many of you will be following the details. There are going to be a lot of pictures and things that are going to be shared online, and it promises to be a really special day. I just hope the weather is also going to cooperate because, wow, such an event that must be celebrated and honored. Well, I wanted to share something else with you. Remember last week I had made mention, I think I provided a link to a new phenomenon that's taking place in the South, particularly where there are those old antebellum mansions and old plantation sites. Well, it is something that I am so thrilled that what was once rather ignored history is now being talked about, and it's now being acknowledged. And the ignored history at a lot of these estates, these historic plantations, the history that has been ignored for the last 150 years has been the story of the majority of the people who supported those mansions, those unpaid people who were enslaved, who were held there in bondage, who helped create and maintain those old plantation mansions. Well, not only are they just part of ignored history, but I'm glad to see that there is an effort taking place. This is a new trend to tell the story of the enslaved who were there. Now, last week when I mentioned some, I mentioned those who were enslaved in Louisiana and what was popping up in terms of telling a greater story. Well, one of the most popular or one of the most famous, I'll say, antebellum slave mansions is that of Monticello. Yes, the home of Thomas Jefferson, author of, yes, the Declaration of Independence, a man of many conflicts. We'll just say he was a complex man, a man who embraced the concept of freedom, although not for everyone, clearly, as he never freed those enslaved to whom he was especially close. We know the story of Sally Hemings. But Sally's story may be fairly well known, but what is not known as widely is the story of the rest of the enslaved population. How did they live? what were they required to do? What were the tasks required to maintain an estate? Of course, much is known in general about 18th century life, but how did this get, I guess, to be a part of the daily lives of those who were enslaved? What did they do? What were the parts of the plantation that had to be maintained by those enslaved individuals? Well, I'm very happy to share that thanks to, think about it, it's a lot of money, a $10 million grant that was given to Monticello by David Rubenstein, who's, of course, a well-known philanthropist. He has devoted that amount of money to telling the story of the enslaved. Well, apparently he's also donated another $10 million gift and to really rebuild the slave sites. And those of you who have visited Monticello, you've heard of Mulberry Row, which is where many of the enslaved people on the Jefferson estate lived. Well, thanks to this new gift by Rubenstein, now they're going to be rebuilding not just the slave quarters, but other sites, slave sites or slave maintained sites along Mulberry Row. And they're putting the roads back on the grounds. A weaver's cottage is going to be added, a storehouse, a stable. All of these things were maintained by a staff, quote unquote, of enslaved men and women. And I've put some information there for you because it is important to really understand how these places came to be. There are tours all the time of these beautiful estates, but the enslaved population for decades has never even been mentioned, or if they're referred to as quote-unquote servants, as if they were paid staff. But this is still a part, a very, very critical part of history that, yeah, it's now unfolding at places as illustrious as Monticello. And I saw someone share that earlier this week in terms of what was going on along Mulberry Row at Monticello, and I was really happy to see that. This is part of our history. Now, many people will always say, well, my folks were from Tennessee or Kentucky or Mississippi or other places. It's still something that's part of the greater narrative. Now, one thing that's important to understand, there were different types of situations in which people found themselves. There were people who lived in on such estates by the dozens or hundreds in some cases, but there were other people who were enslaved in small farms. Maybe it was just a small farmer who only had a handful of slaves as opposed to dozens. All of them are still part of the narrative, and all of them are still a part of the story that you need to tell, that you need to tell in your own family story as well. So, you know, both stories need to be told. When you tell your community story, your family story is a part of that community story. Look around and see, you know, what was the size of the enslaved population, how many people owned slaves and where. And then to really study what life was like, what life would have been in the 19th century or 18th century, if we're talking about the colonial states. It's really something that as we progress and mature in terms of this genealogical quest in the African-American family, it's important that we talk about the one structure that impacted all of the lives of people of African ancestry, whether they were free or enslaved. The institution of slavery certainly affected them. If they were enslaved, of course, it had immediate impact upon their lives, for they were considered, quote unquote, property. But those who were free people, you can rest assured that they were acquainted with, on a personal level, people who were enslaved. They themselves had to have a pass to prove that they were free. There are manumission records showing how some of them had been manumitted by a slave master. All of these things certainly surrounded them. In many places, because of certain codes that were written, they had to leave. They had to leave Virginia and go west to Ohio, or they had to leave Arkansas when the expulsion law took place, and they had to find a home elsewhere, and this was before the Civil War began. So as we tell that story, we've got to put all of that into the narrative. And whether they were enslaved or free, the institution of slavery still affected them. They knew people who were enslaved. In some cases, they had relatives who were still enslaved, and they had to purchase the freedom of their relative if they could and if they were allowed to do so. And again, it was rare to have people of African ancestry to walk freely upon the roads unless they could prove that they had been given that privilege to do so. So it is important that all of these things do become part of the narrative. We've got to start to think differently when we tell our story, because we know it is beyond just a collection of names. Anyway, that's sort of me getting off of getting off of my platform in terms of telling the story and telling it that way. Some information for those researchers out of Virginia, particularly Fauquier County, Virginia. That's around the community of Manassas, around the Plains, Virginia, and some of those other small communities. Well, there has been a really interesting news service. We know the value, of course, the documents that we always seek, and we look for those biographies and or those items that will give us a synopsis of a person's life. We know that in many cases, funeral home records, obituaries, funeral programs can give us that biography. And maybe the only thing that was ever written about a person was written at the time of their death and for a particular funeral service. Well, there is a funeral home that served the African American community in Fauquier County. And I believe it's called Joynes Funeral Home, J-O-Y-N-E-S, I think that's called Joynes. But they are providing a wonderful new service, and particularly those who are interested in the community, because some of these communities are so small that just about all the families in, I guess I'll call it a settlement. Sometimes they weren't big enough to really be a town. The families are often interrelated by blood or marriage. And it's just really wonderful to see that this funeral home is now willing to send emails to individuals who have ties to that area when a new obituary is published. How wonderful is that? Someone has died in the community, and there are some records that a person may be willing to just explore or read more. Well, they're willing to now save or to share, I should say, the obituaries as they're published to anyone who wishes to subscribe to them. All you have to do is just really send an email, and they will let you know when it's updated. It's really quite good to see that, because now if you even go to the link that I am providing for you, you can see up-to-date information that's there. I think, of course, funeral programs like obituaries that are published in newspapers are fantastic. In many cases, the obituaries themselves or those funeral programs themselves often have information about the deceased in terms of who their parents were, the places of birth, and who the surviving family members were. Absolutely a wonderful thing to share. You learn the name of a spouse as well, and it is just wonderful to see that kind of information being shared online. If you go to the link and just click on it, you can see the most recent funeral programs or obituaries that have been published, and if you're related to people in that community, you can download and print them, and it's just really great. It even tells you where the deceased person is buried, which may lead you perhaps to a family cemetery or a church burial site that may be of use to you. So it is really good to see this, and I'm hoping that other funeral homes are making this kind of information available, particularly not just putting it online site, but sending an email when it's updated, when there's a new obituary that's published. So I was really happy to see that, happy to pass it on to you, and to really hope that we'll start to see other kinds of services that are available online. Well, there's some great news that is coming forth, and I really hope in the next month and a half, you're going to keep your eyes and ears open. There's some great news coming out of Family Search, particularly in relation to the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands. One cannot talk about this record set enough, and thankfully, Family Search has been really, really wonderful. They have been digitizing these things by like crazy, and I think they are just about complete with the records themselves in terms of getting them digitized. And what I'm referring to, the Freedmen's Bureau, which we already know is a bureau that affected the lives of so many people after the Civil War, and all of the bureau offices, field offices, hospitals, schools, and of course other records such as marriage records, labor contracts, indentures, cohabitation records, and on and on. Well, that's simply to just say, you know, this is great. Now we have another task. Our task now is to get these records indexed. I am excited because I understand a major announcement is coming out Juneteenth weekend about that project. There has been an effort to form partnerships with several entities, including Family Search, the Smithsonian, the National Society, the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society, and others. This is just really something that, oh my gosh, it's more than important, but there's just so much that is there. And yes, it's time we get busy and get them indexed. Please become a volunteer in that process. Keep your eyes open. You're going to start hearing about this a lot. And yeah, it is time that we hear about this a lot because it's just so very, very important. Also, I want to remind you that coming up, just about a month or so away, the Southern California Genealogy Jamboree. Well, what's particularly exciting is that for the first time, they are going to have a track for African American genealogy. And yes, I am quite excited to be one of the speakers in that track. This is going to be wonderful. If you're in Southern California, please try and get to the Genealogy Jamboree. There are going to be a number of tracks. There are 9 sessions at the Jamboree this year, tailored for African American research. Bernice Bennett, Michael Henderson, Nika Smith, Judy Russell, Krista Cowan, and yours truly, Angela Walton Raji. We are going to be speakers, and this is just going to be, I think, a lot of fun to really have a chance to meet some genealogists who are going to be able to tell stories, really, of all kinds of stories. And I'm just really, really honored to be a part of this fascinating team of presenters. And I think that it is going to be something in which it is inclusive. It is involving people who have something to share and who have something to really, I hope, stir up our community to get involved with telling that story, to find those other stories that haven't been written about enough. One of the stories I'm writing about a bit more in depth, it's an ongoing project that I have, which is looking at the history of women who served in the Civil War as nurses, as nurse matrons, and as laborers, as laundresses, and as cooks. And these women who were tending wounds from the battlefield to the hospitals, these were women who came from different backgrounds who served the men who were fighting for freedom. I'm so excited to be able to work on this project. It is ongoing, But for me, what's been particularly significant is that I am finding the names of more and more women of color who served in that capacity. What a real joy to be a part of that process. But, you know, hey, as I said, if you're in Southern California, you know, come and listen to Bernice. She's going to be talking about looking at DNA testing and the emotional side of DNA testing. Also, she's going to be talking about connecting with slave owners' descendants as well. Nika Smith, many of you know, as a young woman with a lot of energy, is also going to be talking about tracing slave and slave owner ancestors with DNA and genealogy, and of course, looking at African Americans and the Great Migration. Judy Russell has a fascinating background. She's an attorney by training and looks at the law. She is certainly more than well versed in the value of records that are coming out of the courthouse. All of us use courthouse records in our research, and yes, I think there's something very critical to learn from her as well. Michael Henderson, whom we all know, of course, is a person who's been making a lot of headlines as a writer, as author of the book Got Proof, My Genealogical Journal, Journey Through the Use of Documentation, his own memoir dealing with his own personal discoveries. And how many of us use Ancestry.com records? Just about all of us. Well, Krista is from Ancestry, and she's going to be talking about the critical records that reflect African Americans on Ancestry.com. She's a member of their staff, and I think is going to have a lot of things to share. By the way, those sessions on Friday, all of these within that track, they are going to go really starting as early as 8:30 in the morning, just going to go all day. I hope that many of you will be attending the Genealogy Jamboree. You know, I call that one of the big three, meaning National Genealogical Society, the Jamboree, and of course the Federation of Genealogical Societies. Looking forward to being there. Hope to see some of you as well in Burbank, California next month. I am also getting ready, of course, as many of you know, I am getting ready to travel to Sanford. I will be speaking in the track on the five civilized tribes, Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, and Seminole Nations, and I will be including in my presentations records that reflect freedmen from Indian Territory, often overlooked, often never mentioned, often ignored, but we were there. You cannot tell Oklahoma history without telling the story of the population of African ancestry that was there, that predated statehood, and as there was arrival of people from the East in the 1830s, there were Africans as well who were there. So anyway, a lot of things are going on. Now, I mentioned DNA a couple of times. Don't forget to tune in to last night's episode of Bernice Bennett's show. Of course, we know her show on Blog Talk Radio is Research at the National Archives and Beyond. Well, last night, her guest was Dr. Blaine Bettinger, and he spoke in depth about really DNA standards for DNA. This was actually very, very interesting, and I really think that some of the conversation that probably needs to be had in terms of just looking at genetic genealogy standards. I call them guidelines, really, but it was an interesting conversation looking at I guess some guidelines in terms of how one should approach genealogical testing. Interesting discussion was also unfolding in the chat room while it was going on, because those questions really sort of centering around, you know, how does one approach it? Are there situations in which one must be really not just courteous, but beyond courtesy, but really be careful that one is getting individuals to test with consent and other kinds of concepts, how to share that information, how not to share that information. Anyway, Dr. Blaine Bettinger, who is a biochemist as well as an attorney, had some interesting things to say. As you know, Bernice's show airs every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. And of course, if you miss it, you can always catch it, certainly anytime afterwards, as a podcast on the website on Blog Talk Radio. So, hey, my goodness, I just checked the time. I think that is going to wrap it up for this week. It has been a pleasure to talk to you once again. I am going to put some links for you. I do hope that you will have a very good week of research. This is the time now we can get out and do those research, work on those research projects, get to those courthouses. As we know, those courthouses contain such valuable records for all of us. And yes, it's time that we all get busy. Thank you all for listening and for tuning in once again. I do this show because of you, and many of you are so kind to be a listener. And I do appreciate you. In the meantime, certainly, everyone, be careful out there. The weather is, as I said, a little bit treacherous this week. Everyone, please be safe. Have a great week, of course, and continue to do what you do. And that is to keep researching, keep documenting, and always keep sharing what you find. Take care, everyone. Be well and be safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.